Hello. All right, before I get started, I'd like to thank, well, Chris, who's not here, Joan, Scott, for the amazing introduction. White Whale for having me. Being part of this series is truly an honor, especially in a lineup of just such heavy hitters. It's so good. I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to squeeze in my 12 minutes. I'm going to read 10 poems. So if you think I suck, you can just start counting down. I mean, already after the first poem, we're already in the single digits. So there's just a relief of that tension. I'd also really like to thank my friends who are here and watching on Zoom, who have come to support me. But actually, this first poem goes out to all my friends who aren't here because they're at the space I describe in my first poem. It is called The Courts. We come in the night, climbing a wooded path to abandonment, too steep, too dark for the cops to bother. It's Hazel's birthday, botanist, zine wizard, she booked Detroit crust, West Virginia doom metal, Pittsburgh street rock, baked poison ivy and wild pawpaw cookies, greenbrier cake for us too. Illuminated by the bonfire, black locust trees climb heavenward, forming a cathedral embrace. Between bands, we go into the woods just beyond the sagging backboard to check on the generator, collect fallen timber for the fire, as we laugh about the time a Pop Warner parent waving their permit in the air chased the anarchist baseball league off the field below and all the way to the north side. We are here, Jem and Punky, souls who found new bodies in order to stay with us. Chris is lighting off firecrackers at people's feet like he's from Ohio, because he is. Suddenly, city dirt bikers rip through like an encore. Beyond a line of mulberries, traffic hums, people still out there trying to get somewhere in the modern world. I've got a life out there too, with a job, a history, a deep wound that draws me to these wild spaces. Assemblies where I learned, acts of communion, reminders of what it means to be in the world with other lives, other life. Thank you. This one's called Uncle Carl. Stillborn, suffocated in my grandmother's birth canal. The doctor had not yet arrived, and the sisters, who knew nothing about the pains of childbirth, told her to keep her legs together to preserve her modesty. And my grandmother, so terrified of sin, obeyed. This poem came to me in a dream, which is, I'm not really a mystical kind of guy, but that's kind of mystical. It is also the first poem in my book that's for sale there. And just know that if you're an event like this and you buy a book, you're buying merch. You're trying to hold on to time. It's like an Ernest Becker denial of death sort of thing. Right, to try to hold on to this moment forever, like time will never pass. And like with tax, it's less than 11 bucks, so that's a pretty good deal. This is called At the Moment He Was Conceived. At the moment he was conceived, his father, who had paused at the Franciscan seminary, emptied himself after swimming in a sea of sheets and skin, saw his reflection in his wife's pupils. One could only hope the moment was not ruined, contemplating divine judgment over choosing the wrong kind of biblical ecstasy. The boy, whose only memory of his father was set in a cancer ward, told me stories of an evil stepfather and the thousand invisible daggers passed around the dinner table. Years later, at the boy's wedding, his mother told me the story of the time he called on a landline from the very same college campus that separated them decades prior. His voice was so much like his father's, she momentarily forgot what era it was and who she was talking to. At that moment in my mind, I heard the sound of a branch breaking. This is a very relatively new poem. It's called Juneteenth at the Suburban Diner. I guess the content warning is it's white people being white people. Went for a veggie omelet in a land made by a parkway off-ramp and the pursuit of segregation. Shouldn't have been surprised when in waltzes a dude so familiar with the joint, he gets his own drink. sits down next to in the booth next to us and says to every waitress who passes by, "Happy Juneteenth," like it's a practical joke only he knows about. The waitresses are all polite because they have to be, and because he believes in his own natural charm, on the second pass, he sells his joke harder, "Happy June 10th," with a wink. They ask if he wants a coffee refill and check on the next table. All right, this next one is the favorite poem of all the poems I've ever written, so you don't have to like it. You don't even have to pretend. This is for me. And there's a reference to a spot that used to be on the Allegheny River in Lawrence Gulch called Certain Death, which was an abandoned shipping dock. And then the gentrification condos came and took that space away. This is called The Secret City. Punk mass ends with a sign of peace between friends and a five passed across the merch table to help the touring bands find the shadows of Cleveland or Philadelphia. Out of the rock room with a cloud of secondhand smoke into cool, thick night air, the silence of Polish Hill, the ringing ocean of sounds found inside a car the seconds before it starts. This is the skyline of the secret city, whose citizenry are eager to trade sleep for a spectacle on a school night. On the ride home, shows pass into memory, on their way to legend. The tour tape on my front seat, permanent artifact of the intimacies of the scene. Bands ripping holes in time on these breathless nights. Tomorrow, I'll be in a meeting to compose a strategic plan, trying to impress the administration and counting the hours to the next show, trying to relive what I just saw. The lights on a rain-wet Penn Avenue blink yellow as the thousands of slumbering domestic dramas of the East End float by. I push the gas a little harder on my way to my own domestic tranquility, Nell and Libby waiting warm in our bed. I will be greeted with a mumbled, "Did you have fun?" from Nell 4 hours before her alarm goes off and a drowsy wag of Libby's tail. But for now, I'm burning with the streetlights in this clandestine night. Of course, there are other sights to be seen this late. That time I saw Fox crossing Forbes, street racers on the parkway, all-night diner carnivals, certain death skinny dippers, dreams and philosophies whispered on porches. There are, of course, deeper secrets, later nights, basement doors begging to be knocked on, scenes wilder, impenetrable. I could tell you no more, but everyone has to find their own way in past the gates. Thank you. I just want to say, preface this next poem by saying that we are going to reach peak solar activity that we have not seen in decades before the end of this year. This poem is called Hope. I've lived in terror of solar flares since I learned about them from Werner Herzog. The prospect of the big one hitting while I'm at work, wondering if I could survive the walk home, only to watch my medicine run out a decade before the power grid comes back online. I'd much rather the Earth fell out of orbit with the sun, hurling us into deep space, into eternal darkness, into frozen oblivion. At least I think I could get home, spend the last hour of creation in bed with my wife and our dogs, freezing to death as a family, together. I wrote this next one on the day of the Tree of Life shooting. It's called The Most Powerful Hobby. It begins as it always begins, a phone buzzing, distant breaking news alert, a skipped breath as we wonder, who do I know near there? Years ago, Nick responded to my panic text, "I know the shooter, she's fucking insane." Claire and Neil live near Stoneman. This time it was near my house. I guess everyone gets a turn to host these days. They tell us to run, hide, fight, as if. They say this is the price of freedom, and no, it is never, ever free. Still, we find ourselves recalculating the interest to the point where the principal will never be paid. But then what are we to do? Give us your weary, your insecure, frightened to go downtown, paranoid about the government, weekend camo cosplayers, Walmart shopper survivalists. But that's the thing. This is really just about shopping. No one is stopping a predator drone. The good guys with guns put holes in their basement ceilings during routine cleaning accidents. I understand, almost, though I only graduated from baseball cards to books and records. Maybe someday I can get a classic car. Blame it on human nature. Blame it on the summer heat. Talk about Chicago all you want. Whisper quietly about the mixing of the races. But this is just about defending shopping. The rush of acquisition, the primal urge of the horde, the knowledge that you earned this. Treat yourself every day. Tell yourself this is about patriotism and safety, and that when it goes down, you'll be ready, flying sideways in slow-mo, every bullet hitting its target. Sure, man. If you can pay for it, you can have it, even if you don't understand the price. They can't all be about death. So I'll read this one. I know I have some friends who like went to like Spain and like Ireland and stuff this summer. You know, this one's all goes out to all the real ones whose like summer travel plans are staying at their brother-in-law's house at like East Lansing, Michigan or something. This is called Midwest Summer Travel Tips. When staying in a Midwest off-ramp hotel, don't pause too long admiring the new frontiers of beige interior design when looking at the bathroom. Know that state troopers will circle the parking lot like lazy sharks, scanning your license plate once every hour because it's out of state. However, if you're not alone, no matter what you do before falling asleep, make sure you crank up the AC a little too much. So when morning comes, you're both craving warmth. If something happens, you're a tad bit more aware of every square inch of skin. A heightened sensitivity to touch makes for a festive occasion. And when the morning bliss passes in the cold gray light of that room, there won't be a temptation to linger, which could cause you to miss out on the complimentary continental breakfast. Penultimate poem. The title has a shout out to Richard Hugo. Yeah, because that my triggering town is Loretto, Pennsylvania. So these last two both take place in Loretto. This is called Loretto, the Triggering Town. I once lived here in a house with a woman named Danelle and a puppy named Cheever. It was a first attempt for all of us to live in a place we could call home. Results were mixed. Cheever liked to shit on the living room floor. And as much as we vowed we never would, we had the same fights as our parents. Been back many times, insomniac night drives, junctures in adulthood, tagging up before sprinting to the next base, even taught a poetry class once. It was here I learned about those cave paintings in France, red handprints on a wall, hands dead for 30,000 years. Yet their message endures, because it exists at the core of all art and everything else we do. I am somebody. I was here. All right, last one. You know how all of us writers, we have like our first readers. You have to like cultivate that crew of people that the first time around. And you know, there's just, you gotta have some, you gotta have a mix. You gotta have some people who are like, oh man, I'm so tired. You need that. We all need that. And then you also need those select souls who are like, man, your enjambment strategy in the third stanza really shit the bed, you know? And so imagine my surprise when one of those like first group of first readers is like, wow, that's really good. Who wrote that? Did you write that? This is called The Game. Late spring day at the Friars Cemetery, I walked down to see old friends from my college days buried in rows of identical graves, brothers in Christ who all failed to get me to follow them in faith. Perhaps I was their token non-theist friend for keeping piety honest, or they thought they were playing a long game, confident of my long walk towards salvation. Father Tom always told me, doubt is just a natural phase. Those bodies who never knew the sanctuary of other bodies lay under my feet. Victory uncertain. What final thoughts at the end of lives dedicated to opening a door that turned out to be a wall? An ending of absolute despair before the relief of dreamless sleep. The rest of my life knowing it's only a matter of time before the big reveal of which one of us was wrong. Thank you.